So he was, yeah, what is it, Bigelow.
Yeah.
Was in. You get a good relationship, and then gone.
3 months he was gone, and the next guy only lasted 1 month. So we had two of them in 4 months, and they were the only ag agents that ever came to the area. The rest of them were non-ag people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we never got off the ground.
Right.
There was a Lieutenant Ziegler that was the military advisor for ag that I got to know, and he and I probably did as much as the other two did, even though Lieutenant Ziegler, of course, had to be involved with the military part of it during a good deal of time.
Well,
he could get into areas that I couldn't get into.
So of course. Was he heading up the cords for the local area? I forget what CORDS stands
CORDS
for.
CORDS was more of the USAID.
Okay, but it had a military, like, people with it, too. So I thought maybe he was a CORDS representative.
He might have been.
Okay.
I didn't understand him fully what his relationship was, but he might have been with CORDS.
You know. Okay. Yeah. So basically, AID was pretty much irrelevant to you.
Yeah. I didn't. The advisor for the province that I was in when I arrived at the USAID was a man named Mr. Graves, or Groves, and he seemed to have philosophies that were very similar to mine, and I really enjoyed working with him, but he was involved with so many different programs that he didn't have a lot of time.
Well, yeah, I mean, the guy who's going to be the head honcho is almost by definition stretched a little thin. Okay. No, I was just wondering how, so basically, as far as AID was concerned, what it did exist, other than this one particular guy, Bigelow, was perhaps some material support.
Yeah. Pretty much the way it was, you know.
Okay. Well, that's what I usually hear when I interview folks in education, but when I interview folks who are in the field of agriculture, I generally hear a little bit more about some role that AID would play, but I guess they kind of overlooked Rakia in their grand scheme of things, and so you didn't get in with that as much as you might have. Let me pause this one more time. And in the way of some kind of speculative questions, part of the overall question that Mark and I are looking at is just, you know, how this organization operated in different time periods, going from the relatively peaceful era of the late 1950s. All the way through the, you know, horrific Tet Offensive, and even beyond. Now, you left in 68, and you were happy to do so for your own reasons.
Right.
Getting beyond yourself, because after all, you were there, so you could observe. Do you think that IVS itself, as an organization, should have left at that time?
No, I think there was still a role for a small group of IVSers to be there. The American involvement was still very much there, and there was a lot of Vietnamese people that were looking for ways to keep their country alive.
Okay.
And IVS was down at the common level, at the lower levels of their society, doing the best it could.
Mm-hmm.
What was the remaining?
So, and it was still worth the effort.
It was still worth the effort.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
We would like to have seen a different result, obviously.
Sure, in a different context. There's no question about that.
But we didn't know what the result was going to be at that time, and so.
No, none of us have crystal balls.
So, I think there was still a good reason for us to be involved in Vietnam after the Tet Offensive.
Okay. Well, the mm-hmm. but you know, the question is important. I mean, how often do you go into a Bosnia? Yeah. And when do you stay and when do you go and how much can you do? And here's the closest thing we have in our own experience to that kind of situation. And there will undoubtedly be more in the future.
I think IBS struggled after that because our role diminished in terms of the American presence because of the numbers of other Americans that were in other programs being involved there. Before the Tet Offensive and even before the early part of the American involvement, we had much greater influence on the life of the society because we were greater in terms of numbers.
We meaning IBS.
Yeah, IBS.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think many of the best results of IBS program came early in the Vietnam situation.
Mm-hmm.
I know Don Luce had many positive comments about his experience before he became team leader. That may have taken place or occurred because it was more peaceful at that time than when he became a leader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I think very true, and I think that's just to let you in on things in a little in advance. That you know, both Mark and I are finding that out.
Mm-hmm.
That it almost is obvious. You know? I mean, if you're not fighting a war,
mm-hmm.
things do go better.
Yeah.
But the job satisfaction level was obviously very high
mm-hmm.
for people who were there earlier. Did you know many people, I mean, you knew some people who were strictly in education when you were a volunteer, who were actually working
IBS
in education?
IBS volunteers?
Right, yes, I'm sorry.
Don Him was one.
Okay.
He was strictly education,
mm-hmm.
and he was in my location. He wasn't there but only about 3 months.
That's right, yeah. Then you inherited his English stuff.
What
about other folks? Did you have a chance to get to know or talk with people who were working in education?
I did at that time. I can't remember their names anymore.
Okay.
So I can't help you a whole lot.
No, not the names. Just you did.
I know in Cantol, C-A-N-T-H-O.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There were several education people in there. And
okay.
That was the regional center for where I was located, so I spent some time in that location for regional meetings. And, the education people were there usually when we had those meetings.
And how, and your impression, not with names at all, but how was their job satisfaction, especially compared to people who were in agriculture activities?
Well, I think most all of the IBS volunteers were dissatisfied.
Okay.
But I think the ag volunteers were more dissatisfied than the teaching group, the education group.
How come?
I think the education people usually were able to get to their school
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis without
uh-huh.
feeling threatened by the war.
Mm-hmm.
They were losing students to the war, and they were losing cohorts or teachers. But the school, with the physical building, was still
mm-hmm.
there for them.
And the routine of work.
The routine was there, where our routine was continuously being upset. And
mm-hmm.
Our co-workers were changing more frequently, I think. Education people. And education was only one of about four divisions that IBS had, I think. Ag was one, and education was one, and then there was health workers and things like that. But I think the ag group was probably the most dissatisfied within IBS. Because the nature of our work was more scattered.
Sure, of course.
And
you had to go around and meet different people in different parts of the province or whatever, sure. Yeah, and so as soon as you can't travel the roads, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Never mind staying out overnight.
Yeah.
You can't do it in the daytime. You know, you're really in trouble. Yeah, because that's when that photosynthesis happens. Okay, just pause again.
and the groups, the biggest contrast is within the years that you were there. If you were there in the early part of the Vietnam or IBS experience, you were much more satisfied than those in the later
years. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely within the framework of the time period, that exerts a control. But I was looking at within the year periods, too, there's shifts that are taking place that are definitely linked up. And that's worth noting.
I don't recall that IBS had too many volunteers that were from countries outside of the United States until later in the experience of IBS. And I know there were some that came to Vietnam while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that as being a real positive aspect of Vietnam and IBS.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wasn't sure that that was going on when you were there.
It was going on. I know there was a Filipino man there, and there may have been somebody from Taiwan. I recall going to a Taiwanese experimental station that was just north of Saigon a little ways, and I was thinking that there was a volunteer from Taiwan as well. But
could be.
It might have been. I got just confused.
No, it's very well may have been. Yeah.
But I thought it was very imposing on the United States to come in and say, well, we're going to have volunteers and they're going to be all USA volunteers, and we're going to tell you how to do things. I thought it was much improved when we got people from the Philippines and there were other countries that were involved later on.
Yeah.
And even then, were involved in other countries. We were bringing people from neighboring countries to tell them things that they might help, might do to help themselves.
As one Asian to another.
And they were not only helping the Vietnamese, they were helping the Americans that were there as volunteers to understand what could be done. And I think IBS emphasis on that has been real positive. I haven't talked to a lot of volunteers that went later after I was there to get their views of it, but I think that probably most of them find it to be real helpful. It does kind of cause an administrative bungalow to work with countries that, from other areas and trying to recruit volunteers from other areas, but
yeah, it does call for more work.
There's more of an effort that could be under the United Nations or something like that, but it really wasn't, but it could have been.
Well, I'd rather have it out of any government's hands, whether it's single government or multi. I think it always would be better in a private agency. But okay, no, that's good. I knew that, you know, a few things might have been going on when you were there. But yeah, that's another change. Going from a purely American effort to it's only by 60, I've seen some annual reports so that by 69 or maybe 70, but I think 69, the annual report listing down the names of volunteers has got people from all over. You know, that there were not just one, but like three or four Taiwanese, some Japanese, Filipinos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, even one or two Europeans. And I was always curious about whether the organization was deciding to shift away from Americans because too many college students were coming over straight from SDS. And then kicking up a ruckus as soon as they hit Vietnam and... You know, which may have been, but certainly if it works out in the field, as you've been describing.
Well, part of the experience involves the training before you get to your country. And if you get training immediately with people from other countries, you get an extra cultural experience that adds to the possibilities.
Yeah, because they would need training also in Vietnamese history and culture and language and things like that.
Yeah.
A Taiwanese is not capable of immediately striking up a conversation with a Vietnamese. Any more than is American. Okay. Let me ask you kind of a wrap-up-y sort of question. And that is a big one. How would you say that IBS has affected you personally?
Well, it's exposed me to a culture that I probably never would have been exposed to otherwise. Even though I went through the Peace Corps experience
as well,
I think the fact that I jumped in and went with IBS enabled the Peace Corps experience. And then otherwise, I don't think the Peace Corps experience would have happened. And I think then that has broadened my view of the world considerably.
Okay.
It's given me an understanding of the complexity that we operate in. And it's given me somewhat of a distrust of our own government, the United States government, and their conduct in other countries, because I've seen so many places where they've attached on to local people who were not good leaders,
mm-hmm.
and were in many ways corrupt leaders.
Oh yeah.
And puffed them up or supported them economically and done damage to the country they were supposed to be helping.
Surprise, surprise.
And if I hadn't had the Vietnam IBS experience, I don't think I would have understood that to the
mm-hmm.
degree that I do now.
Yeah.
So I've really profited, I think, from that.
Mm-hmm.
Learning another language can be helpful in terms of broadening your understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But the two languages, Vietnamese and Spanish, were difficult for me because of my hearing loss.
Yeah, yeah.
That I discovered later. And I'd like to go back and try to relearn either of the languages now to see if it made a difference, but I haven't been able to do that. I'm glad I went.
Uh-huh.
It still bothers me today that I'm not as involved and as successful in helping people understand the world situation as I'd like to be.
Hey, that's you know, across the board, you know.
But we each have to deal with our own situations.
Oh yeah, sure.
So I'm very positive towards the IBS experience and to the IBS organization, even as it exists today.
Mm-hmm.
Don Lewis came to my location in Wisconsin when I lived in Wisconsin, and spent about 4 days with us.
Oh, really?
And I planned some locations for him to do some speaking.
When was that?
A radio station. It was in the early 80s or late 70s sometime.
Okay, all right.
And he and I again reacquainted at that time, of course.
Uh-huh.
And he and I felt a lot alike, I think, about the Vietnam experience. And
mm-hmm.
and the experience that you get anytime you leave the United States. I know I was surprised to find that even the English language papers in countries outside the United States is so much different than what the English language is in the United States.
You mean the use of the language?
The use of the language and the what they report.
Oh, yeah.
You get outside of the United States and you're more likely to hear criticism of the United States,
uh-huh.
even in the English language papers,
uh-huh.
than you are in the English language papers in the United States. And I don't think it's because of censorship.
No.
I mean, censorship in terms of you can't print this. It's censorship in terms of sense, we don't want to criticize. We might get people mad at us.
Oh, here you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're here.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, might lose our advertisers.
If you're not in the United States, you don't have to worry so much about losing
mm-hmm.
your position or your influence or your accessibility to things, because you're already separated.
Yeah, but they wouldn't hear about the lost boa.
No. Well, there's some risk, obviously.
I'm sorry. Okay. Is there something I left out to ask you?
you'd want to add?
No, I thought maybe we were going to leave out the foreign volunteer experience
that I
mentioned. But
I'm glad you did.
We didn't, so I guess now that we've covered that, I don't think there is anything. I did meet with some of the former volunteers in Minneapolis about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Willie Myers was one of those who was up there, and I think Jim Lynn was up there, too, at that time. So I got a little
Jim Lynn?
Contact, yeah.
Oh, that would have been...
Late...
That's 76, 77?
Yeah.
That's 20 years.
Yeah, that's about 20 years. Yeah, okay. Because you know he later committed suicide.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, Jim Lynn?
Yeah,
he later committed suicide. Wasn't too long after coming home, because he was in Laos until 75, and that was about a year or two later.
Okay. Well, maybe he wasn't there, but
no, he could have been there. He was already back in the United States. It just when he returned, I know this from someone who knew him in Laos at the end and kept up with him a little bit. He was having marriage problems and work problems, and it happens.
To be a volunteer, you have to sacrifice some pay that you might have gotten if you come out of college and stayed in the United States.
Well, you get compensated other ways.
Yeah, but for some people, that's an important ingredient, and I can see where there'd be some frustrations. I felt that some of that frustration, knowing that I could have been making more money here than I did there. Maybe lost some of the experience that I gained, but
I think that came as an aftersight, you know, because when, especially now, he can see people that didn't spend that 5 and 6 years, they came right out in the 60s and went gung-ho, so their career is set and they're kind of angling off, and he's pinnacling, you know. And so it's just a different time.
Well, when I left the United States, I had envisioned that I would not be just there for 2 years outside of the United States. I would be involved in Foreign Service work at some time.
Oh, really?
As a career.
So you were looking for that?
I was looking towards that as a possibility, but then...
At least as a possibility. Yeah.
Because I had the educational level, I thought, that would allow me to get in. I didn't have the experience level yet. But I think then the cultural shock problem that I felt in Vietnam kind of edged me away from staying into the Foreign Service field.
Okay, sure.
So then I lost the potential economic benefit that I might have experienced, because I had started shifting gears again and going into
other areas. But you learned a valuable lesson, though.
But you're right. Economics is not the whole picture. Right?
Well, and also, think if you had just gone on to school, got the Foreign Service test, and then went out and had the same experience, then you'd really be stuck.
Yeah.
Either you would have, again, had to given the whole thing up, or you would have been your whole life in that. And you'd have an ulcer and, you know, hate your job and everything.
Yeah.
So as long as you've had a decent life as a human being, you know, you're light years ahead.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty much wrapped up. Thank you very much, Roger.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You're leaning on the album. I think it's now time for us to look at the album. And I'll turn this off and say, again, thank you much.
Thank you.